Welcome to another AAT podcast on the important task of payroll year-end returns. But what is payroll year-end? It's the time to reconcile the payments and deductions made throughout the tax year, payments made to employees and directors, and the statutory deductions that were taken from those payments. Have the correct deductions been made? Do we need to make adjustments before completing the end of year PAY returns? Remembering, if the employer fails to deduct the correct amounts, the employer is potentially liable for the under deduction. Well, what I want to look at is completing those returns. And before I start on that, let me give you a guidelines on the sort of information available from HMRC to help you. Every employer now gets a CD-ROM, which has a load of information, help books, training, a lot of guidance there on how to fill in the end of year returns. In February, HMRC issued its employer bulletin number 28, again with a variety of guidance on completing end of year returns as well as starting the new tax year. The HMRC help book, the E10, finishing the tax year, is probably one of the most important guides for doing end of year returns. Then we've got the CWG2, the employer guide, the CWG5, which I'll probably refer to later, talking about deciding whether it's Class 1 or Class 1A National Insurance, and for expenses and benefits, the booklet 480. Well, we've got to start with the deadlines that you or your clients have got to be prepared to meet in order to avoid interest charges, penalty charges, or paying tax that should have been deducted. The first one is a payment deadline. The statutory deadline, the final date to pay any 2007-08 PAYE income tax, Class 1 National Insurance contributions, and CIS tax deducted from subcontractor payments, is the 19th of April 2008. That is the statutory deadline, but this year it's a Saturday and the revenue want payment made in their account by the 19th, so we've effectively got to work to the 18th of April deadline. The alternative is for large employers who have to make mandatory electronic payments, and they have a deadline of the 22nd of April 2008. That also applies to smaller employers who voluntarily pay electronically. Failing to meet either of these payment deadlines will result in an interest charge, and that could be expensive. The next key date, looking forward, is the 19th of May 2008. That is the statutory deadline for submission of PAYE and NIC end-of-year returns. The P35, the P14, the P38A. These are forms that we'll talk about in a little while. HMRC has an extra statutory concession number B46, which basically says that automatic penalties will only be imposed if the returns are received after Tuesday the 27th of May 2008. It effectively gives an extra 7 working days. But really, you should work to the 19th of May deadline. Moving on, the 31st of May 2008 is the final date for supplying a P60, the Certificate of Pay, Income Tax and National Insurance Contributions, that has to be given to any employee that was in the employment at the 5th of April, the last day of the tax year. I emphasise that if they were in employment on the last day of the tax year, 5th of April 2008, they must be given a P60. They shouldn't be given a P60 if they left during the tax year, because then they will have had a P45 Part 1A for them to complete their tax returns with. They can be given duplicate P60s, something that wasn't possible in the past, but they should be marked duplicate. Moving on to July, the 6th of July 2008, an important date for a number of reasons. First of all, it's the final date for submission of forms P11D and P9D to your tax office or your client's tax office. and for providing similar information to employees. They should either receive a copy of the P11D or a memo, a statement, something to tell them what expenses and benefits that they've had and are being reported on the P11D. But again, note that the deadline this year is a Sunday, so we have to work to Friday the 5th of July. The 6th of July 2008 is also a deadline for third-party providers of taxable expenses and benefits to notify the recipients of those benefits. Now, let me explain that to you. You may have firms that sell their products through large stores like Harrods, Debenhams, Boots, House of Fraser, what have you. They may provide incentives to the employees of those stores, employees that are employed by Boots and Harrods, not by the suppliers. If they give taxable vouchers, could even be something like a holiday to these people, they have to tell them what they've given them in terms of the cash equivalent or the value of the benefit. And the deadline is the 6th of July. Another example might be garages selling their cars using hire purchase, where the finance company might provide some incentives and again have to notify that, unless they've used a tax reward scheme, which is not really a payroll year-end issue for us now. The 6th of July deadline is also important if an employer has a PAYE settlement agreement. Let me explain what that is. It's an agreement with HMRC, with the revenue, whereby the employer picks up the tax liability for a taxable expense payment. Taxis from work to the station to go home. A Christmas party that's over the exemption limit and is taxable. A birthday party, some other reward, something that might go into a PAYE settlement agreement because the employer doesn't want to put it on a P11D or put it through the payroll for the employee. Well, the deadline to register such an agreement is the 6th of July 2008 in respect of last tax year 2007-08. It's also a deadline by which a PSA agreement can be amended. So when you're doing the end of year returns, if you pick up anything that needs to go in a PSA, which hasn't been there before, time to amend it. That's the important point. Moving on to another very key date, the statutory deadline for making the final payment of Class 1A National Insurance Contribution on benefits in kind, taken from the P11Ds, the total of Class 1A National Insurance of all the P11Ds submitted to HMRC, the statutory deadline is the 19th of July 2008. But again, it's a Saturday this year, so we need to be working towards a Friday, the 18th of July 2008 deadline to get that very important return in and to get the payment made and avoid an interest charge. As with the other payments, there is an extended deadline, the 22nd of July 2008, for electronic payments made to HMRC. So bear that in mind if you're going to miss the 19th of July deadline. The 19th of October 2008 is the payment deadline for the income tax and Class 1B national insurance liability that arises on a PAYE settlement agreement. So the grossed up expenses and benefits and the national insurance tax is due, NIC is due, by the 19th of October 2008. Remember that in terms of getting the computations into HMRC, again to avoid an interest charge arising. Well, let's move on to the returns, and I think we should start first of all by considering the requirement to submit returns online. If your client or your employer has 50 or more employees, you must file the pay-as-you-earn returns online, the P14s and the P35. Failure to do so will result in a penalty being charged. Many employers with fewer than 50 employees do actually file online, perhaps because they find it easier, but also because there are tax payment incentives which encourage smaller employers to file online. Employers with fewer than 50 employees do not have to file online until 2009-10. The tax-free incentive for 2007-08 is £100, and it will be credited after the returns have been filed and accepted, and HMRC will then issue a letter notifying of the online filed tax repayment, which can be credited then or reclaimed. HMRC says that pay-as-you-earn online for employers and agents is the quick and easy way to send us your returns and tell us when people start and stop working for you. Now, importantly, for any of you out there that wants to do it online or must do it online but hasn't yet registered, there is a procedure for registration. You can go onto the Revenue website and register, putting in the details, the employer's details. You need the employer's PAY reference, the employer's accounts office reference, and obviously the employer name. This information is more readily available on the P30B yellow payslip book, which every employer with a pay-as-you-earn scheme should have. That's the information to have. Now, very importantly, if you're going to register, you have to activate. So register, HMRC will then issue the notification and a PIN number, which has to be activated within 28 days. So don't leave this till the last minute, or there won't be time to do it. Well, the next question that arises really is, do you have to do a return at all? Last year, HMRC were quite concerned about the number of nil returns. HMRC says that it receives returns that are not needed every year, and that we must only submit an employer annual return if the employer had to keep a deductions working sheet. That's a P11, or it may be a computerized version of it. If the employer had to keep a deductions working sheet for at least one employee during the year, then filing is correct. HMRC guidance says that by law, you only need to complete a deductions working sheet where your employer has given you a P45 Part 3 with a date of leaving in the current tax year. In other words, 2007-08 for these returns. Or you pay someone at or above the lower earnings limit, which may mean they pay no tax, no national insurance, but if they're paid above the lower earnings limit, they'll get a credit for national insurance, therefore you need a P11. Another alternative is if you deduct tax on the earnings. So if an employee received less than the threshold, but perhaps couldn't sign a P46, tax will have been deducted, and if tax is deducted, you have to do a deductions working sheet. You have to do a return with a P14. The additional thing HMRC tells us is that if we send you a code number for an employer director and you operate it against their pay, in that case, you need a deductions working sheet. Now, many of you out there will also deal with contractors, and contractors should note that they shouldn't submit a P35 if there aren't any payments, but they should submit a P35 if you're a limited company and you need to report an amount in the CIS deduction suffered box, even if all the other accounting box entries are nil entries. Contractors also need to note the guidance headed Contractors and P35 Box 23. This points out that Box 23 is for the total of the figures entered on the CIS 300 monthly returns, the new returns for 2007-08. It gives us a warning that you can't use this box to correct any monthly returns, and you have to phone the HMRC helpline. Famous number 0845 366 7899 if you do need to adjust a monthly return. If your employer or your client doesn't need to submit a return for 2007-08, you should contact the tax office and tell them that a return won't be sent. The guidelines makes no reference to submitting a nil paper return, but any employer registered for online filing or who filed online last year will not get a paper return this year. filed online last year, no paper return. Just a notice through the email, through the system, through the online system, telling us that a return will be required. Right, let's look at the P35. Form P35 is the employer annual return. For those of us or our clients that did file online last year and were still registered for online, as I've said, we won't receive a paper P35 for 2007-08. Any employer that has 50 or more employees, again I've said already, is required to file online. A P35N notification to file will be made available to view from the Pay As You Earn online service page using the View Employer Notices option. I myself have received email messages on the 12th and 13th of February for my clients. So I logged on, printed off the online notices and put them on my files. Paper B35s are issued by the accounts office towards the end of the tax year. And if one is needed, because you're not going to file online, you will need to contact the tax office and ask for one. Again, don't leave this too late. You mustn't miss the deadline for filing the returns. HMRC's E10 Finishing the Tax Year booklet states that an employer annual return submitted in paper form will be rejected by HMRC if any of the following applies. If the stationery used has not been approved by HMRC. If the form P35 is not signed. If the form P35 is not fully completed. If the form P35 is not enclosed. If the form P14s are not the correct version for the year. You should not be using old stock from last year. If a form P14 is not sent for everyone listed on the P35. If the forms P14 do not all have a valid entry in either the National Insurance Number box or the date of birth and the gender boxes. What do they mean by a valid entry? Some payroll software will still use a temporary National Insurance Number if they haven't got the proper National Insurance Number. Temporary number, TN, T for temporary, N for number, 110651, the date of birth, M for male. That may be used by the software during the year, but it is rejected. It's not acceptable for the end of year returns. If you haven't got a National Insurance Number, you have to put down the gender, male or female, and you have to put down the date of birth. The return will be rejected if the forms P14 do not all have an entry in the employee name box. So obviously there's got to be a name in the box. The National Insurance Contributions boxes, if they're not fully completed, the return will be rejected. If the forms P14 do not all have an entry in the pay box, and then if the entries on the form P14 are unclear, for example, the entries are made faint. Entries are not displayed within the white boxes, perhaps due to carbon smudges. The font size of the print is too small. The forms have been hole punched where there is relevant information. The forms have been damaged. The forms have not been split correctly. The forms P14 are attached together with either glue or staples. Sticky labels or correcting fluid have been used on the forms P14. Don't do that. If you're doing them manually, you make a mistake, you have to throw it away and do a new form. If the sprockets have not been taken off the forms P14. This may seem a bit of a nitpicking exercise, but of course these forms have to be read by scanners. And perhaps this is why HMRC are trying to say to us that filing online is so much better. It's cleaner. That's what HMRC says. It's cleaner, there are less mistakes. And you will get an on-screen message through your software telling you if your return has failed and why. And you'll get that message a lot quicker. HMRC also makes the point that if there are any errors, They've got to be corrected and resubmitted by the same deadline, the 19th of May, if the late filing penalty is to be avoided. Now, if returns are sent on paper or by magnetic media, they will be returned for correction if they fail the initial quality checks, and they must be corrected and resubmitted by that 19th of May deadline. However, HMRC will not carry out a detailed review of the paper and the magnetic media returns until after that deadline on the 19th of May. So if they then pick up mistakes and reject them, it'll be too late to correct in time. Okay, let's look at the paper form P35. It's not changed much this year apart from dates. It's a four-page form. Page one of the paper P35 spells out the employer obligation and also tells you where to get help. Page two and three requires the listing of directors and employees and the summarising of all the payments made in the year. And then page four comprises the checklist at part three, which we have to discuss because it's quite important. There's a box for the employer contracted out pensions number. And then at part four, the very important employer certificate and declaration in part five. You must list each employee for whom a P11 deductions working sheet or equivalent record was required. If some or all of the P14s are being sent by the internet, electronic data interchange or magnetic media, there's no need to complete part one, summary of the employees and director section of the return. What might happen is the payroll bureau might submit the P14s and the employer might submit the P35. The next requirement is to list the directors first and to mark their entries with an asterisk to signify that they're directors. This means Companies Act directors. It doesn't mean people that have the name director but aren't directors. Then list employees in alphabetical order of surname or the same order as you have collated the P14s. There may be batches, there may be in branches, divisions, but in alphabetical order in each batch or division. For each employee, the total of employees and employers' national insurance contributions recorded in column 1D of the P11, end of year summary box, have got to be listed. And for each employee, the tax deducted or refunded recorded in this employment box at the foot of column 6 on the form P11. I've said already, the checklist on page 4 is quite important. It requires a tick in the no or yes boxes, as appropriate, for 6 questions. Be careful not to just tick the first box for every question and assume that that's right. It's not. Question 1 says, have you sent a Form P14 end of year summary or completed and retained a Form P38S student employees for every person in your paid employment, either on a casual basis or otherwise, during the tax year shown on the front of this form? So in other words, 2007-08. You've got an option of ticking no or yes. Most employers should be ticking yes. If no is ticked, it says please send a Form P38A employer supplementary return. So again, tick no, you've got to do a P38A. I'll explain the P38A procedure in a moment. Question 2 says, did you make any free of tax payments to an employee? In other words, did you bear any of the tax yourself rather than deduct it from the employee? I would expect the answer to that to be no, almost every time. If there were any free of tax payments made, and the answer is yes, you will need to have the supporting information to explain to HMRC if they ask questions. I would also add that if there is a PAYE settlement agreement in place where the employer perhaps thinks he's paying things free of tax, that question doesn't apply to the PSA. Question 3. This says, so far as you know, did anyone else pay expenses or in any way provide vouchers or benefits to any of your employees whilst they were employed by you during the year? Again, I expect most employers to say no, but I gave you an example earlier on of the 6th of July deadline for a third party notifying employees of their benefits. We talked about if an employer selling products in Boots or Harrods, Debenhams, etc., were giving vouchers as incentives to the employees of Boots, etc., then if the employer is aware of those incentive schemes, the employer would have to answer yes to question 3. And again, be prepared to explain that to HMRC if they come and do an audit and ask about the question. Let's move on. Question 4 of the checklist. Did anyone employed by a person or company outside the UK work for you in the UK for 30 or more days in a row? So 30 consecutive days. So anyone employed by a foreign employer based outside the UK working for you in the UK? If the answer is no, fine, we move on. If the answer is yes, it then asks, if yes, have you sent a Form P14 for them? And again, the expectation would be that it will be yes and yes. If yes, people like that have worked for you and you haven't done a P14, HMRC may come calling. Because there is a requirement for a UK user of a foreign employee to operate Pay As You Earn, even if they're not the employer, if the foreign employer is not in the UK and can't operate it. So be very careful about that one. You might need to take some advice on that one. Question 5 says, have you paid any of an employer's pay to someone other than the employee, for example, to a school? Again, expectation, most of the time the answer is no. But if the employer has paid school fees to the director's or the employee's children's school, there's a potential national insurance point at least here. Was the contract between the school and the employer? If it was, it should be a benefit in kind and it will be reported on the P11D. If it wasn't, if the employer was simply reimbursing the bill that was the employee's or director's bill, then the question here will be yes. And the expectation would have been it should have gone through the payroll. Again, be careful of that one. Question 6, the newest question, but there now for some years. Are you a service company? So obviously, most employers, the answer is no. If the answer is yes, it says if yes, have you operated the intermediaries legislation, sometimes known as IR35, or the managed service companies legislation? So if the answer is yes, the expectation is that the second answer will be yes, or questions will be asked. But again, I say for most employers, the answer is no, even if they have employed the services of a one-man band service company partnership or what have you. The question is, are you a service company, not have you engaged the services of a service company? So I think we move on from there. I've said already, part 4 is the contracted out pension schemes. If you have a contracted out pension scheme, enter your employer contracted out number from your contracting out certificate. And then we go to question 5, the employer certificate and declaration. Very important, of course. Tick one box to complete each statement below, it says. And then it says, I declare and certify that forms P14, end of year summary, for each employee or director for whom I was required to complete a form P11 deductions working sheet or equivalent record during the year are all enclosed. So the expectation would be there would be a tick in that box. It says, or have been sent separately in one or more parts. Then it says, completed form P38A employer supplementary return. And the tick in the box is either is enclosed or is not due. If question 1 of the checklist answered no, there should be a P38A. If question 1 answered yes, in other words, all the P14s are there, then the answer is not due. Next question, completed forms P11D and P11DB, returns of expenses payments, benefits and Class 1A contributions, and it says are due or are not due. So at this early stage doing the P35, if you know that there's no P11Ds that are due and are going to be submitted, you should say are not due. If you tick the box to say they are due, there'll be an expectation later on that P11Ds will be submitted. Then the declaration says all the details on this return and any forms enclosed or sent separately are fully and truly stated to the best of my knowledge and belief, and it requires an employer's signature. It doesn't have to be a director, it should be a responsible person. It could be perhaps the payroll manager, the HR director, what have you. And again, importantly, it must be signed and dated, and HMRC asks for a telephone number to be inserted there in case there's a query. Let's move on to Form P14. Form P14, the end of year summary for 2007-08. A Form P14 must be completed for each employee employed during the tax year, including anyone who has left during the tax year. Using the totals taken from the Form P11, the deductions working sheet. I've mentioned already the HMRC booklet E10 finishing the tax year. It's available there to help you if you have any problems with the figures there. You need to ensure that you're using the correct forms for the 2007-08 tax year. And if you're doing them manually, it'll be the P14 manual. The P14s must show the correct national insurance number, otherwise the return will be rejected. So as I've said already, they will reject a temporary number. If you don't have a proper national insurance number, then you leave the national insurance number space blank and you would enter the gender, male or female, and the date of birth in the date of birth box. Now, some do's and don'ts about the P14. Do agree with your payroll bureau or your agent what information they are filing online, if it's going to be done online. Make sure that you give your payroll bureau or agent your payroll records when they need them so that they can file your return online and on time. If using a computer or a machine to print the P14s, use the appropriate impact or laser printer version of the form P14. Otherwise, it might not line up. Show the dates as DD, day-day, MM, month-month, and then YYYY for the year. So, for example, 11/06/1951. Make sure that the printing is clear in all the boxes. Print only within the white boxes. The entries mustn't reach the box edges, otherwise the scanner will reject it. We're told to use font size 10 at 6 lines per inch. If filing all the forms P14 by hand, use the Form P14 Manual 2007-08 version. Use a ballpoint pen or similar so that all three copies are easy to read. No carbon is necessary with these forms. Write clearly or they may be rejected. It's a three-part form: the tax part, the NIC part, and the employee P60 part. Now, some don'ts. Don't complete P14s in a pile, as the markings will copy through to the forms below. So you might need a metal plate in between the forms to help with the clarity and to avoid markings carrying through to another form. Make alterations. If you make a mistake, tear up the form. Fill in a new one. No alterations. Write clearly again or they may be rejected. Don't use pound signs. Don't use continental sevens. So that's the form P14. I mean, there's some more points to come about that later. Things that may be not included that should have been included. But let's now have a look at students. The student form P38S. The form P38S is an annual return, but it doesn't have to be sent to HMRC with the P35 and the P14s by the statutory deadline. But it should be retained by the employer for 3 years, plus the current year. Students who have worked during the current year, 2007-08, and who have not completed a P38S should be asked to complete one now, because it'll be no good saying to HMRC in years to come, it was a student, that's why I didn't deduct tax, if you haven't got the form completed by the student. Remember that any students working for you or your clients over the Easter holiday period will need to be issued with a new P38S to cover any continuing employment after Saturday, the 5th of April 2008. This should be done as soon as possible after the start of the new tax year, and it must be done before the student's last payday, and before the student returns, of course, to college or university. The P38S procedure only applies to students that have worked for you or your client during the holiday periods. It doesn't apply to students who work outside of the holidays. The Form P46 procedure will apply instead for those students working outside the vacation periods, perhaps evenings or weekends during term time. Employers also need to be aware of the possibility of tax having been underpaid where code no tax has been used if the amount paid to the student hasn't been monitored. The student signs a statement for 2007/08. The student would have signed to say, I'm not going to earn more than £5,225, the personal allowance limit. If an employer pays the student more than that, the employer has to stop the no tax code and start deducting tax, either using code OT on a month one basis or code basic rate, depending on what statement the student signs on the P46. So again, the important thing at this time of the year is, was it monitored? Should any tax have been deducted? Do we now have to make an adjustment? If the employer fails to do that, it's the employer that will end up paying the underpaid tax. Importantly for students and the P38S procedure, this has no relevance to National Insurance Contributions liability. A student that's under 16, and there are some, wouldn't have any National Insurance liability. But any student of 16 years of age or older, certainly up until the pension age of 60 for women and 65 for men, has to pay National Insurance if the amount of their earnings reaches the threshold. So I emphasise, the P38S procedure doesn't apply to Class 1 National Insurance. And if at the end of the year a P14 is required and there's been National Insurance, then the Form P14 should be completed with the NI details in the box. If there's been no National Insurance, the Form P14 in the NI box will default to Category X. Okay, let's look at the Form P38A. The P38A is the employer's supplementary return. This was the form referred to on question one of the checklist on the P35. If question one, the first question was ticked to answer no, the requirement was you must do a P38A. So this supplementary pays you in return is for workers for whom you have not completed a Form P14 or Form P38S for 2007-08. The form itself states you must complete this form if you answered no to question one of the checklist on your Form P35, employer's annual return. I would say it's a form that's often overlooked by employers, but the questions asked should be part of the consideration for tax year-end filing. It is a supplementary pay-as-you-earn return, and it should not be used for reporting any amounts paid to a self-employed individual. I've seen errors arise where employment status challenges have occurred because they've been put on this form by mistake. Employers should complete one of the two declarations. The front of the form is the first declaration, where employers are asked to look at your records for each worker and consider whether you hold a Form P46 that's been completed either Statement A or B by the worker, and the worker was paid less than £87 a week, every week, or £377 if paid monthly. If the answer to that is yes, there was a Form P46 and no one earned more than £87 a week, you sign the front of the P38A, no more details, that's it. But the two sections A and B on the back of the P38A will need to be considered if there hasn't been a P46 or if payments have been in excess of the £87 a week. So what does it say? The two sections A and B restrict the amount of reporting. Casual workers earning less than £87 in any week or £377 in any month and taken on for a week or less, they don't need to be reported at all at Section A or B, unless they receive more than £100 in the year. Casual workers employed more than once in the tax year, but for separate engagements of up to a week, will be reported on Section B of the P38A if they were paid more than £100 in total in the year to 5th of April 2008. So envisage the situation. Casual comes along in June, does a bit of work, gets paid £60. That's it. Thank you. Goodbye. Not expected to come back again. In February, that person happens to be paid again, another £60. Again, no expectation of doing any more work. Total for the year, £120. That person's name, address and the amounts paid would have to be included on the P38A, on the second statement. At this stage, I really need to warn people to be careful about the names, addresses, information. I'll talk a little bit later on about casuals and the problem of pay as you earn, but the correct name and address are needed there. We don't want to see entries like M. Mouse of 10 Downing Street. Right, before I finish looking at the actual completion of the end of year returns, let us consider the end of year returns as regard the construction industry scheme. When the new construction industry scheme started at the beginning of the 2007-08 tax year, the requirement to complete and submit annual returns ceased. No more annual returns. However, any employer that is a contractor and or subcontractor in the construction industry still has some end of year reporting responsibilities for reporting details of CIS deductions. I mentioned this earlier, but just let me repeat. The annual P35 return requires an entry at box 23 of the total CIS deductions made by a contractor from payments deducted from subcontractors. This is the figure taken from box 4.6 of the CIS 300 monthly return. Then box 28 of the P35 requires an employer to report the amount of CIS tax deducted from payments received as a subcontractor, but that only applies to limited companies. At the same time, we should perhaps consider whether any payments to subcontractors that should have gone through the payroll and be included on the P35. This might include employees that were wrongly treated as self-employed, but it might also include casual labour, where the workers did some work, didn't provide any details to verify them being a subcontractor. Do they need to go on the end of year returns? So that for now is really the completion of the payroll year-end returns, that part of the payroll year-end exercise. And we'll be doing another podcast covering some of the other points, potential failures and what have you. So thank you for listening. Goodbye.